Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Federal Premium Ammunition and their new centerfire rifle ammunition, Terminal Ascent. Now, the Terminal Ascent has a slipstream polymer tip that helps flatten trajectories and initiates low-velocity expansion at longer ranges. The Terminal Ascent gives you match-grade long-range accuracy in a bonded hunting bullet, and it comes in a variety of cartridges, including the 6.5 Creedmoor, the 280 Ackley Improved, the 28 Nosler, the 7mm Remington Mag 30-06, and the 300 Win Mag. If you want to find more information about the Terminal Ascent, visit federalpremium.com, and while you're there, check out It's Federal Season, the official podcast of Federal Ammunition.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
Hey guys, welcome back to Land and Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
And Matt Dye is Chicago?
Chicago right now, yes.
Yeah,
very cool. In the airport, waiting to board and get back home.
Yep, so and, you are flying back from Ohio, an ongoing project that we have going over there in, I guess, southeastern Ohio. Ohio's a weird state to give directions to. When people say, oh yeah, I'm on the east side, I'm always like, okay, yeah, wait. It's almost like trying to say on a circle. You're in the eastern side. It's like, well, how is that kind of working? And so I just had that conversation with a guy. He said he hunts eastern and northeastern. I was like, oh, really? And he told me the town, and I looked. I'm like, well, that is nowhere near where I thought southeast Ohio or eastern Ohio was.
Right.
I would call that northeast, but... Anyway,
especially when you get to the southern portions, I feel like sometimes like southeast is just like this giant unit, like, and the people are like, oh, I'm just southeast Ohio, but like,
yeah,
there's like only a small little portion of Southwest Ohio, because the East just wants to bleed over just based on the shape of it. But yeah, you know, that's been a fun a fun project, and a project that's been evolving for years now, really.
Yeah.
You've
Was
been there
2017, the first visit on this specific property?
Yeah, I want to say it was 2017, or 17 or 18, one of the two.
Yeah,
but
18. You know, and it was 2018.
Was it 18?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, 2018, yeah. And you know, that was with Todd Watts, who's been on the podcast multiple times, talking about, you know, the pond that he's built on this property. You know, same property, but now it's switched hands. And we're working on, you know, same property, but different goals and different objectives. And I think that's kind of, if you will, the heart of the podcast this week. It's like, we've got the same property, but based on ownership changes, we've got different goals for the same property. And therefore, not that the overall management completely shifts, but there's some drastic things that are changing based on new goals,
but
and
also
new direction.
Also, one of the biggest differences is going to be living on the property and not living on the
mm-hmm.
property.
Yeah, and
having,
I mean,
more hands than just one man.
We have way more hands to work and get stuff done. But then at the same time, too, it's those same hands who are working are also holding a gun. And so therefore you need way more spots to be able to hunt, way more wins. Like, we've got a family of four kids and multiple hunters, and adults, parents and everything too. So, you know, what hunting setups or, you know, would have worked for one owner isn't going to work for that many people. And so having a property, like, you never want to tell a kid, no, you can't go hunting, or no, we can't go hunting. So like, you have to have, and set it up appropriately where, yeah, there's some really good deer that are on the place. We actually saw one of them last night from the house in an adjacent food plot. But, like, there's some good deer. So all that combined, you've got to set it up and hunt it from season opener to the close of season really wisely. And I think that big change – in ownership has really caused us to almost look at things with a really, really fine tooth comb and make the necessary changes to accommodate that.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of times when you own a property or you bought one, you're like, oh, this is really, really, we talk about the term all the time, turnkey. Well, is it turnkey for you, or is it turnkey for the person who had it? Like, don't be afraid to look at a property and see really good habitat, really good hunting locations, a lot of things already done. Don't be afraid to change those, though, too. I feel like you can get stuck in a rut almost with, like, oh, well, this is just how it is. Well, that doesn't mean that's how it has to be all the time.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, we use the term 80 grit management a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And 80 grit is kind of a good metaphor for a lot of times when we show up to a property, when we show up, the first initial is like, okay, we need to do 80 grit. It requires a lot of rough cuts, kind of we're not fine tuning or getting down to the nitty gritty and perfectly. We just need change quickly. And so that's where the 80 grit management, but this project has been ongoing. We spent a good amount of time in Ohio, so much so that we kind of laugh about it. It's our second residency. And so, you know, there's a lot of return trips. So it's getting out of 80 grit, and it's getting more down to the, mm-hmm. the fine grit of going, okay, you know, the habitat is really making some drastic changes. Now we really need to focus on the exact layout, trying to maximize every acre to where there's plenty of sets, there's plenty of hunting locations, there's plenty of bedding locations to where the whole family can enjoy it from when it opens up October 1 and closes up at basically the end of the year or just after. And
well,
I'm totally taking a swing at Ohio seasons because I haven't hunted it. So I'm just like, I think that's about right. But
It's like the last Saturday of September is when it opens, and then it'll actually close in February.
Oh, dang.
It's like the second week of February. So, yeah, there's a really wide, like, swath of time that, you know, you have to keep a property and the animals on there really feeling secure. But, you know, it's got the ability to do that with the cover that was there existing from the massive amounts of old field management on the property. But also in the last 5 or 6 months, new owners have taken hold of chainsaws and not let go. I mean, there is now probably 18 to 20 acres of clear cuts now, in addition to all the cover that was already there, dotted out throughout the whole property. And that took work. I mean, that's some pretty intensive labor to be able to implement all of that. But those are maturing. And I think that's the other, or one of the other really cool things about it is, like, those were begun in, let's just say March 1, really last part of February, but March 1, and cut till about April 1, April 10, something like that. And you look back, like, that's when coronavirus hit. Like, that's when it really got heavy, hot and heavy. But in that amount of time, we went back to those areas and we looked over them. And the regeneration is great. And it's fantastic. And it's supporting, well, you go in there, there's already adequate cover. There's a lot more food. There's a lot more opportunities for nesting, for bugging areas. There's songbirds were going crazy in and around these areas. And just the vegetation is now at a height and a growth and density where, right, during fall, we're going to have some deer bedding in there. And that's just a matter of one growing season. And you're there.
What kind of regeneration are we looking at? Is it lots of brambles, lots of woody browse, lots of herbaceous plants, or lots of invasive species?
Lots of woody browse. A lot of, you know, some stump sprouting, some root sprouting. A lot of herbaceous things, though, too. We're seeing goldenrod popping up throughout a lot of those units. We're seeing American burnweed, of course. That's kind of year one. Pokeweed everywhere. A lot of there's some Japanese honeysuckle in some of these areas.
Yeah.
Burning on a rotation. This property just has quite a bit of Japanese honeysuckle spread throughout, so that wasn't a huge shock. But quite a bit of brambles too. Blackberry, definitely some mare's tail too coming up in some of these areas. But when we're looking at the height and structure of most of the stuff, again, this time frame, it's just blown up. It's been awesome. And not only have those cuts been implemented, like, you know, just 1.5, 2 acre-ish size units in the heart of timbered areas, but some areas that were just, if you will, left alone. They weren't old field. They were just openings from way back when. And there's probably now 15 of those acres. Those acres were in a downward spiral from what they were offering and the direction that they were headed. They were very heavy invasive species, very heavy vines, very tough to get in, tackle, and manage. But their locations, just kind of by happenstance, were in areas that would have been great sanctuaries. And so they were offering some cover based on the density of them. But honestly, the course and the direction that was going was bad from an overall health of landscape, and the species there were just poor. So those have been completely cleared out, dozed out. Big Buck Hotel, which is a native blend from Pure Air Natives, has been planted, and that's coming in pretty decently. It's been kind of a tough growing season out there. A lot of rain early, and then it's like the sprinkler just absolutely shut off. But the natives are doing really good, and they're coming in. We're seeing that basically expected growth in there year one from natives. So they're peeking their head up and they're present. So that's another very encouraging thing. But so from the number of acres of clear cuts that were put in, that's getting 20-ish or so, and then all this native grasses and forbed growth that's been planted that's now getting to a maturing stage over the next couple of years. That's 35, almost 40 acres worth of additional cover just like that right off the bat. So we've got isolated pockets of dense cover.
You say 35 acres. Remind us again, that's the bedding thickets plus the planted...
Plus those areas.
And then how many acres of old field?
Oh, lordy. On this 530, 50 acres, somewhere in that ballpark, there's probably easily now 150 acres of old field.
So you're looking just under 200 acres of pretty quality cover. Quality cover, quality forage, both from the woody browse standpoint, good winter forage and spring, and then, of course, year-round, but really when they focus in on it. And then the old field of spring and summer going into fall.
Yeah. We're talking 200 acres of, like, the type of cover that is 100% 5-6 foot and down. Like, there's not, like, a question of, oh, is that mediocre, decent cover? No, it's like, that's what we want.
Yeah.
And I don't think that many places could say, hey, half the property is providing that ample cover that everyone's desiring and looking for. I mean, that's a lot of cover to be able to hold deer. But then you go and you look at all the additional acres of food plots. There's probably 60 acres of food plots. And those have been some of those. There's been a couple like smaller food plots opened up, but some have decreased in size. It just depends on the layout of the locations that they were in previously. So with the addition of a couple acres, newly freshly dozed areas or opened up areas, let's say, we've created more hunting locations. And then the ones that maybe have shrunk down or have changed locations are offering better just access. And so boundary road systems have and implementing those over the last, let's say, few months has certainly allowed for way more security to be offered across the place and sticking to that road system. But you can still go out with the family and enjoy and see deer across from the old field and larger views and landscapes. But when you're on the outside, everything is interior of you. And so you're keeping that center very secure. And then again, with 200 plus acres of ideal cover, they're not going anywhere. Like we're watching deer, you're driving up and getting just relatively close to them and they're not bounding away. Like they're in cover. They know they're in cover and they're fine. And so it just makes the property not only increase in usable space for whitetails, but also from the enjoyment standpoint of the whole family.
Yeah.
That's fun to see and fun to watch it develop and grow and mature into what these new owners are looking for.
Yeah. Todd, so the previous owner, Todd, great friend of ours, he was really getting rocking on this old field management when we visited with him or you visited with him in 2018. There was this big major push. He had a lot of food plots in place, or a good amount of food plots in place, and now it was shifting to old field management, and then the bedding thickets, and so from the old field. Of course, he came on the podcast and talked about how much the old field was like, oh my goodness, this is just crazy, the change that's happening on the place, and then when he decided to part ways with the farm. And the current owner took over. It was like, all right, we're continuing that, but then we're going to get even more in depth. And they've really gone into the old field management. Prescribed fire has been implemented even more. And then when those young forests, those bedding thickets took hold, it's like now we're getting to a point. And so I say all that because what's most exciting to me on this whole project and should – I guess one of the biggest takeaways on this podcast is I feel like people get stuck in a rut to where it's like, okay, this month I do this, and that month I do that, and that month I do that. And you do the same thing over and over, and then they're just like, at some point I'd love to get to it. I'd love to see a change in the deer herd. But you're doing the same stuff over and over, expecting different results. And we know that's the definition of insanity. And so Todd shift to the new owner. You go old field, now let's carry the torch and expand upon what he's done. Now let's do the young forest, these bedding thickets. Let's manage with prescribed fire. Let's plant the natives. Let's fine-tune our food plot program. And you do that, and now we're third year into this, and we're going to get into more of a set the cruise control rather than try to gain our speed and get to that. We're going to set the cruise control, and now let's just be in routine maintenance, not the actual overhaul trying to get to where we want to be. And so many times people think, there's too much work. But, you know, if you can grind it out and do the work the first couple of years of implementing a plan, you really can get to a point where it's like, wow, we're kind of on routine maintenance now. The work has been done. We really just have to continue the pace of just making sure it's not getting out of hand.
You know, you're not going to have drastic changes in a deer herd and either the size or the quality unless you do drastic changes to the habitat.
Yeah.
And there was already great deer here. Todd had harvested and had documentation of fantastic deer the first year or first month onto the property of the new owners last year. They killed 170-inch deer. I mean, it was a great property already, but it's still climbing. We're still taking those strides. And so, like, last year, I want to say 25-plus does were harvested on the property. This is 500 and a half acres. Like, that's a lot of deer being harvested. And guess what they're seeing, though, this year from a management side of things when it comes to the actual deer herd itself, away from the property management to the deer herd, because it's rare to find and see a doe without twins. We have changed that. We have seen a very positive response in that regeneration from the farms, like, because we're gonna have to continue to you know, have the foot on the gas when it comes to managing those levels and the carrying capacity and social stress and everything. But he goes, what that was an indication to me was, hey, we can reduce the deer numbers. They're responding, and they're responding really, really well. And he goes, I know that was another sign to me that there's quality cover out there. He goes, if most of the does we're seeing have twins, he goes, that tells me that I'm giving them what they need.
Yeah.
Because they're not aborting fawns. The fawns have cover to hide in. There's coyotes, bobcats, just like every other property around here. And imagine having that much cover and how many more coyotes you would have on a property. Like, they're there.
Yeah.
But he's still seeing successful reproduction and at really good rates on the property. So all those signs are cues that, hey, I'm headed in the right direction, but heading in the right direction and being done or satisfactory to what they're looking for are two different things.
Yeah. And that's a great example of what we've mentioned before, but we'll reiterate again, is when you take a property and you start going, okay, full-fledged, we're doing management with meaning. We're going to actually manage native plant communities. We're going to increase the amount of year-round forage, everything from woody browse to brambles to herbaceous plants to grass, native grasses for quality cover, more of a shrubby component, all those things. Mm-hmm. You see wildlife populations increase, and because of that increase, or part of that increase is because does no longer have as much stress. There's more food available, so therefore they have twins or triplets. But then there comes another problem that people forget, is your management may shift from habitat management to herd management, to where your problem could be low quality habitat. But when you turn that around and you go, okay, now we have quality habitat, your biggest problem likely can be a overpopulation of prey species like white-tailed deer. And then what happens with that is they can begin to start eating that vegetation, higher stress levels, and therefore the population declines back down. So if you can know what your management goal is, or laid out goal for these 3 years, okay, these last 3 years, habitat. Next 3 years is going to be maintaining habitat and maintaining herd populations.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's all a good point. I mean, it goes to show, like, you know, again, Todd had done some amazing things to the property and had a drastically improved it. But one guy, it's not feasible to keep up with that number of does.
No.
So having
Todd.
A family of multiple hunters, that's a great thing for the property. You know, they were able to efficiently remove the number of deer needed, and they're going to be able to continue to do that. And so, and this is a whole other podcast topic that we talked about, but there's a stark difference between property management and herd management. A lot of times you just hear like, oh, that person, he's managing the farm. Well, what does that mean? Like, what does that management mean? But I'll say this, if you want a premier top quality, top notch farm, you're doing both.
Yeah.
It's not one or the other. It's both. And so
to see
a family do that and come together and work together is awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah. A lot of really good farms that have had quality habitat, higher quality habitat for the neighborhood, have declined in the quality of their game species because they didn't manage the game species the same way they managed the habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I just like, man, how many times can we say that to where it's like, yes, you got the habitat improving. Don't forget to shoot does.
Yeah. And I want to say this to, because I know they'll listen, but I want this to be an encouragement to everyone else out there who's like slightly afraid of making changes. These landowners, the landowner's family, they hadn't ever owned land before. They had leased property. They had hunted it, but it was just strictly like, I'm putting out cameras in August and I'm hunting the property.
Yeah.
So therefore, new ownership of a property. How do we manage this? Like, how do we do this? Like, they had not gone in and ever done TSI. They had never done a prescribed fire. They had never planted a field, never spread fertilizer, like never done any of that. Like, they had never hunted over food plots, period. They had just hunted over, you know, timber and some supplemental feed stuff. So it's like this whole introduction to land management was brand spanking new. And the only way to figure it out is to get out there and do it. And they figured it out, and they're continuing to figure it out. So they've done a lot of fantastic work, as we've talked about. But I want that to be encouragement, because to other people, they didn't know how to create a bedding area. They didn't know how to broadcast natives. They didn't know how to calibrate a seed drill. They didn't know how to spray a food plot. Guess what? The only way to do it is just to go and do it and figure it out and work with people who know how and can help you along the way. And now, again, the changes that they've seen, that encouragement, like, I mean, those changes are encouragement for them. Like, wow, we did that, guys. Like, literally, we burnt that this February, and it's come back screaming. Like, it is awesome stuff.
What do you think the landowner and team have – maybe they'll come on the podcast sometime, but
yeah.
What has been their, based on now they've owned the farm not even a year?
Yeah, not even a year.
So, in over the course of months, they've gone through planting food plots, they've gone through prescribed fire, they've gone through old field management, correct?
Mm-hmm.
They've gone through some bedding thickets or young forest management. What have they, is there anyone that ranks, out of all the things they've done, is there any of them that rank highest on the list of like, wow, that was immediate results?
I think that the biggest thing for them was seeing, so like they had continued to maintain and refine some of the old field areas, like going back in and spraying some of the fescue out and everything. So they had some time spraying, but then they had time resetting the old field. And so like, burning it this February, I think, was like that aha moment. One, they loved it. Like, it was just, it was the, like, greatest thing since sliced bread, right? Had a blast doing it. But then they were like, okay, literally, how long is this going to take to come back? And so they kind of doubted how quickly the response would be. But now you look at it, and to a trained eye, you can see slight difference in height of the cover. I mean, we're talking inches and whatnot, but like ground cover and freshness of vegetation, and palatability, tenderness, this and that, like there's a difference. But they were thinking it would take a year. Like they were expecting like 2 foot of regrowth, but now it's like, oh no, we're hip high going into the beginning of August kind of thing. And so it's rocking and rolling. By the end of this growing season, they're gonna be back to normal height, and that has floored them. That type of response from the old field and the injury transfer, that vegetation just responding so drastically. It was black March 1. And they're like, dude, it greened up faster than anything else. I was like, yeah, I know. It's awesome. So I think that was just like they cannot wait. The next one of the next units, I should say, one of the next units, it's big. It's more or less 30 acres or so of an old field unit. And they are just, I mean, they can't wait for March, February timeframe to be able to get in there and burn it. And they're itching to do it.
That's awesome.
So, I would say that's been one of the coolest things, I think. Cutting in 20 acres, I think at the end of it, they were like, all right, cool. That was a lot of fun. We're seeing some great response. But I could set the chainsaw down for a little bit and not feel sad about it. But food plot-wise, I feel like if they had more rain earlier in the summer and that hadn't just kind of shut off, food plots would be way on up there. But overall, they've picked up on rains and they're looking great going into fall. So
that's awesome.
All in all, it's a heck of a exchange in ownership to just pick up where it was left off and then just go from fifth right into sixth gear and just keep on grinding it.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, hopefully that's encouraging to a lot of our listeners who. Because, you know, we've consulted now since 2017. We worked with a lot of landowners in a lot of places. And I think, I mean, what keeps us in business is the fact that it can be overwhelming. And also not having direction. Well, if you listen to the other podcast this week, you'll hear some kind of some discussion on different things. But having a direction and knowing what to do and having the confirmation that what you do is going to make a fairly quickly impact on the wildlife. Because I think, you know, the flashy silver bullets, instant gratification goes with a lot of product and not always with habitat management techniques. And so, with that being said, there is some great opportunities, and this farm is a great example of, you know, it doesn't take very long to see the results and see the wildlife adapting to it.
That's definitely true. And any time that you can see those wins and see that type of response you're looking for the management that you're doing, those practices, is all the fuel you need to keep going. And they've got lots of fuel. It's always good to just to take that time and slow down, be like, listen guys, this is the response we want. I flew the drone over some areas and they're like, let's sit down and go through these things because this is exactly what we want to see, and show them, like, see how this could connect with that, all these different things. They're like, oh, I got it, I get it. So that's certainly beneficial to slow down, observe, and watch what you've done.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a good reminder, too, that, hunting season is getting ready to start up. There's a lot of guys that are really, I mean, shoot, there's people hunting out west right now for pronghorn. There's going to be people hunting for, Tennessee. I think Tennessee's doing the velvet hunt. And then there's going to be guys headed west. So, you know, we're getting ready to be full force into hunting season. But that's also a good reminder that we're going to be, as soon as that's over, full-fledged consulting season.
Yes.
And with that being said, we're already booking consults for January and February. And so you guys, if you are interested and you're wanting to hit that time slot with us as soon as deer season's over, to get after it so you can have a lot of work done before the next spring green up and growing season, give us an email. Shoot us an email at info@LandonLegacy.tv.
Yep. It's filling up pretty quickly, which is a great thing. But to be able to take advantage of that kind of pre-growing season, I'd certainly encourage everyone to reach out sooner rather than later to get on the calendar.
Absolutely. So, well, Matt, travel safe, man.
Yeah. I'm getting ready to board now, so hopefully I'll be home shortly. And I'm hopeful that we'll get some rain this week. Golly, it doesn't look like it, though.
No, it does not. It does not.
Kind of sad.
Into that. Oh, gosh. Man, I tell you what, the last three growing season, fall growing seasons have been awful.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, fun stuff. But hopefully somebody's getting rain somewhere.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, sounds good. We'll catch up and see everyone next week, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.